Please turn to hymn number 378. This hymn was composed by Martin Luther. It is somewhat autobiographical in the fact that the first verses he talks about what it was like to be in the confusion of the darkness of sin in a world without grace. And then in verse 5, the poem changes somewhat and it becomes a dialogue between God the Father and God the Son. And then finally it becomes, the poem is Jesus Christ himself speaking to us. We're going to sing stanzas 1, 9, and 10, but before we do that, I would like you to look especially in stanza 1, where the poetry goes like this. With united heart and voice and holy rapture singing, proclaim the wonders God hath done. In that little short phrase of poetry, we can see Martin Luther's attitude towards music in the church. That music was important in the church. He retained it in the church. Certainly he was not the first person in the history of Christianity to think of the idea that it's a great deal for people to get together and sing hymns together. He was not the first to do that. But he certainly rediscovered that tradition in the church. And so he saw a very, very important connection between what we sing and what we teach. So the singing and the proclamation is the same thing. So your pulpit is your hymn book. Your hymn book is your pulpit. Your hymn book is your doctrinal textbook. Then if you look at stanzas 9 and 10, stanza 10 especially, when Christ speaks to his church, what I have done and taught, teach thou. My ways forsake thou never. So shall my kingdom flourish now and God be praised forever. How does Christ's kingdom flourish and how is God praised? The kingdom flourishes and God is praised when the word is taught in its truth and purity. Teaching, teaching, teaching. This could have led the Lutheran church to become a very arid place where the sermon took the place of a lecture. And we all know how much lectures are fun, especially if the lecture lasts an hour. Can you imagine? Completely an hour. The hourglass, and then they turn it over and then they keep preaching. But the music and the liturgical forms and shapes that were retained by the Lutheran Church softened that lecture hall approach to teaching and made it a very living, breathing thing within people. Luther understood the idea of an earworm and how when a tune and a text are connected, that will stick with you. After you've left the church, 3 days later, you might start humming, and not know where that came from in your head. But hopefully along the line you would make the connection. Stanzas 1, 9, and 10, please stand.
Thank you.
It could be argued that everything that the Lutheran Reformation did and taught was mined from the Church of the Ages that had existed up until that particular time. In hymns 316 and 317, we see an example of Martin Luther looking to the past for inspiration. In this case, he's looking towards a poem that was written originally by the Czech reformer Jan Hus, John Huss, the Goose of Prague. And, of course, it's only a passing reference to Huss. It's mostly Luther. But in this particular case, at the time of the Lutheran Reformation, of course, one of the great doctrines that was being debated was the Lord's Supper and what is happening in the Supper and what should the people be receiving in the Supper, especially for the Lutheran Church, the idea that the laity would receive both the body and the blood of Christ in the Supper was an important thing. And this is another one of those very, very teachy hymns. But despite the fact that it's very teachy about a doctrine that could be relatively obscure, it always focuses again on Christ and what he has done for us. Sometimes when we're singing hymns are poetry, of course, and sometimes they're not the best poetry in the world. If you were a poet, one of the last things you would like to do is write a hymn text. You'd rather write something else, I've been told. And sometimes in our translations or even in the hymns that we sing today, there are words that are a little bit odd that we don't always use. In this particular case, and that means, you know, when you find a word that you don't understand, what should you do? Ignore it. Because that's what we do at a liberal arts college. No, you go to the library and look in the dictionary, or better yet, you pull out your phone and look it up. Imagine how difficult that is. Well, the word that we have to consider, and it's going when you run across it, you'll know it. It's the word wheel, W-E-A-L. Now, that word is not a difficult word to understand if you add a T-H to the end. Wealth, right? Wealth is usually a good thing. Wheel is also usually a good thing. Unless you're in the nursing program, in which case it's an ishy, pus-filled thing on somebody's skin. But that is not what the word wheel means here. It here is the primary meaning, and the primary meaning is wealth. So we get to sing two different tunes, and along the way, we're going to hear what Christ has done for us, and we're also going to hear what Christ has given us in his supper, and what our obligation is towards that gift, and what a great blessing it is to us who are sick and in need of medicine. 316 and 317.
Thank you.
Another hymn on the Supper. Certainly Luther wrote hymns about all the parts of the Catechism, baptism, the Lord's Prayer, the Ten Commandments. We sang the Ten Commandments hymn a few weeks ago. That's that really fun one. Da-dun-dun-dun-da-da-dun-dun-da-dun-dun-dun. We went back and forth with it. I'm sure you all remember that. But these particular two are both examples of how the Church celebrates and remembers the great gift, the Eucharist, which is, of course, the word Eucharist means the giving of thanks, the Holy Communion, by which Christ's body and blood are united to bread and wine, and then also united to us, how it is also a celebration of the unity that we have in the Church. Let's stand and sing stanzas 2 and 3.
Thank you.